Jeannie Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series, empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kevin Combs from McKinney Flavelle. Today is October 13th, 2017, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Weekly Podcast. Today, we'll be discussing yesterday's WASD report, and I'm glad to be joined by Nicole Thomas, Vice President McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Nicole. How are you?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing pretty good for a Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you're still very happy following the results of the National League playoffs.
Thank you for bringing that up, Kevin. You know, being born and raised in St. Louis, that I'm a naturally born Cardinals fan, right?
Of course, but we have many... We have many, many fans of the Cubs with the food industry so heavily centered around Chicago. So we want to congratulate all them for their advancement to the National League Championship Series.
Yeah, I'm happy for them, certainly.
Great. So, Nicole, just let's get started. What are your impressions of the WASD report yesterday, particularly surrounding the corn estimates?
Good question. You know, corn was interesting, but there's a few things going on in the soy complex that are worth mentioning as well. But let's start with corn. And as as was mentioned in our yesterday version of our sweet beat, the most noteworthy change related to corn was the upward revision to the average corn yield, now projected at nearly 172 bushels per acre. A crop that at one point people were nervous about now seems to just keep getting bigger and bigger. The impact on the balance sheet was relatively minimal, as some of that higher yield was offset by lower acreage. But recall, at the beginning of the growing season, there were heavy rains through a swath of the Corn Belt, and it appears that some of that acreage was indeed lost to soybeans. Combine that with increases in a couple of categories of corn demand, and the net effect was a 5 million bushel increase to ending stocks. Now, that pegs stocks to use at a little over 16%, which would be considered a bearish S&D situation. Now, I'm sure at least a few of our listeners are scratching their heads and saying, okay, so the U.S. situation looks pretty bearish. Why was the market for corn futures up yesterday, and why is it still up today? And to answer that question, there are a couple things to consider. First, the global balance sheet is a little less rosy as the domestic balance sheet. You know, ending stocks were lowered additionally to about 201 million metric tons. That's down by about 1.5 million metric tons from last month's report, and down by over 26 million metric tons from 2016-17. Moreover, global demand in 2017-18 is projected to increase by 2.5 million metric tons. And this is the balance sheet as it exists today, with a few questions remaining. For instance, what will Chinese production actually be? They seem to be coming back into the market, and word out of China is production will be closer to 212 million metric tons versus the 215 USDA is currently showing. Also, there's been a lot of talk about La Nina of late, which leads to moisture deficits in South America. So it's plausible that these things are on the minds of market watchers. But if we really want to know what led to higher corn futures yesterday, one only need to look at the soybean market and accordingly the U.S. soybean balance sheet. Now, everyone in this market has been expecting improving soybean yields. You know, the weather during development was good. There were no periods of significant crop stress, etc. So imagine the market surprise when the yield was lowered ever so slightly, but nonetheless, it got the market's attention. But the real culprit for the rally in futures was due to some changes on 2016-17. Now, ending stocks for 2016-17 were lowered by 44 million bushels as a result of two things in general: the USDA firming up the average yield for that year with a minor reduction, and revising three of the four demand categories higher. And that, in effect, lowered the starting point for 17-18, i.e. our beginning stocks. There was also a revision to 2016-17 figures that offered support to the soybean oil futures market, a 150 million pound increase to soy oil used for biodiesel last year, and lowered soy oil imports walloped ending stocks pushing them below even 2015-16's levels. And worse yet, ending stocks for the current year are now projected lower by 220 million pounds. So in a nutshell, the soy complex seems to have taken the lead on price direction for both soy and corn futures, at least for now.
Great. Great commentary. I had one question, Nicole, with I think going to be on all of our listeners' minds. When you look at the December corn futures, last year we hit a low just under $3.20 a bushel. And that seemed to come, I believe, around this time of year. What's your expectations for the lows now, given these numbers?
Well, you know, Kevin, that's a good question. And I've been a little surprised at the general lack of movement in that December contract. When you look at where we have posted a bottom thus far, anyway, towards the end of August, early September, we've had some iterations in the market futures movement since then, but none have come down to surpass that low established at that point, which tells me that not only is that a strong point of support, but that it's going to be a little challenging to get enough bearish information to push it much lower. And at this point, I think for most of the market, the biggest opportunity for additional bearishness was an increase to the yield, which is what we got in yesterday's WASDE. But it hasn't had that effect on the December contract that one might expect from that. And I think that's a reflection of the market having the mentality that things are pretty bearish in corn and are already pretty well aware of that. I'd say the last thing that's a little interesting to me is if you look at the spread between the December and the March contract, December 2017 and March 2018, and it's widened quite a bit. But when you look at consecutive futures or the deferred contracts beyond that point, the spreads are maintaining themselves somewhere around, you know, 6 to 8 cents, which has been pretty consistent over the last few months. So, you know, you never rule out the possibility that things won't tumble additionally. But at this point, you know, one could make the argument that the lows have been posted and that there isn't much more extremely bearish information that could come to the market to change things from a fundamental standpoint anyway.
Okay, great. One other area I think numbers were basically left unchanged was in South America production for 17-18. Do you see anything coming from South America that could influence the market?
And see, that's a good question too, Kevin. And that's why, you know, when it's easy to get kind of comfortable with the bearish market, especially considering we've been in one for an extended period of time, a couple of years at least now. But I think as far as the South American balance sheet is concerned, the one thing that isn't really being taken into consideration just yet, and obviously shouldn't because we don't know, is what the impact of a potential La Nina might be on production in South America. And so, you know, thus far, we've seen reasonably regular rain events. But when you look at the soil moisture levels in some of the major production regions for both corn and soybeans, things still look pretty dry. And historically, when we switch to La Nina, that tends to mean less precipitation for South America. So, you know, that's one thing that I would really keep an eye on as far as corn is concerned. And one of those factors that you keep in the back of your mind that makes you wonder if there isn't, if we aren't at the point where there's a little more opportunity for upside than what remains for downside.
Okay, great. Did you have any initial comments on sugar?
No, it seems like the sugar report yesterday was relatively quiet. I don't know. Anything there that really caught your attention?
Well, there were a few things that caught my attention. One, there was a lot of changes made throughout the report, but it seemed like everywhere there was a lowering of a number, there was an offsetting number increasing supplies somewhere else. In particular, the areas I think most people were looking forward to seeing the USDA's thoughts on was cane production in Florida. And as expected after Hurricane Irma, we did have a 90,000 ton decrease. ever. I think that was a lot lower than most people were looking for. I think most people were expecting somewhere between maybe 140,000 tons to 200,000 tons in Florida. And then the other little bit of surprise was in Louisiana. The USDA had previously been putting production at 1.626 million short tons, and this month they raised it 1.69, nearly offsetting all of the increases, nearly offsetting all of the decreases in Florida. And
wow.
Yeah, and then, you know, also on imports, we saw a similar situation with some offsetting changes. They lowered imports for 2016-17 by 116,000 tons for the TRQ. But in 17-18, they increased imports 74,000 tons on the TRQ, 250,000 tons for other program imports, and in Mexico, 18,000 tons. So net-net, the changes over the 2 years really did not have much of an impact.
So, Kevin, I mean, we got a broad idea of what's going on as far as the beet and the cane crop are concerned via the WASDE report. But what do you think specifically as far as beet harvest is concerned? I know we're getting started. Things are coming along. What do you expect in terms of production sort of on a more regional basis?
Okay. Yeah, great. Obviously, we're starting to get heavily under harvest here, and they're making good progress. But we do have some concerns developing across a few of the beet-growing regions. Particularly, Michigan has been really dry, and so we've been seeing yields estimates coming down, and we're now looking more like 27 tons per acre, where given the advancements they've made, you know, really would look for a good crop somewhere over 30 and into the low 30s. In the Red River Valley, we're seeing mixed results. Again, we were looking for super strong yields a couple months ago. However, weather's not been cooperating, particularly when you look at the Southern Minnesota cooperative. They've been getting inundated with a lot of rainfall. It continues to stay too wet, and so we're looking at some pretty strong yield reductions there. American Crystal, same type of thing. We're looking at not the rainfall or whatnot, but yields have definitely come off of their record highs that we were anticipating. So we've seen some losses on the beet crop, and that was reflected in the WASDE report. Moving out west, things have been looking a lot better. The plains seeing good yields across most of the growing regions there. And then when you look at Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, particularly, yields are very, very strong and potentially establishing some new records in those growing regions. So it is a bit of a mixed bag. You know, the USDA lowered their 17-18 projection by 40,000 tons to 4.977 million short tons. However, I think they may be still a little bit conservative. We could see that number still be a little bit stronger, but certainly, you know, weather is showing lower yields than what we're at looking at the last couple months.
Yeah, I see. So what do you think this means in terms of pricing or any effect at all?
Well, over the last couple months, you know, we've seen prices creeping higher, and particularly since the announcement of the amended suspension agreements. And beet prices have trended up where we're seeing offers around 33 cents per pound FOB bulk basis. And I think those values are pretty good given the supply-demand situation. And you know, we're in a relatively balanced scenario with the USDA projecting a stocks-to-use ratio of 13.3%. So I really see prices hovering around these levels. Maybe there's some opportunity when we get under harvest and we start seeing flows of imports to where you see a little bit of a downside. But I'd definitely be leaning to, you know, a situation where there's potential for higher prices than lower prices.
Sure, sure. Okay, now this is the magic question. And admittedly, has very little to do with this WASDE report, other than it directs WASDE reports. But heard anything as far as the farm bill is concerned, or any discussions surrounding the sugar title, since we're kind of rounding the corner for that time frame?
You know, it's been really quiet on the farm bill front, especially pertaining to sugar. There's certainly been some things thrown out in the press and talked about from different grower groups, et cetera, trying to set the stage for maintaining the sugar program as is in the upcoming farm bill. And from all accounts, and, you know, I think with what's going on in Washington, D.C., I really don't see any changes from the sugar title of the farm bill. I think it's a pretty minor point overall as far as what's contentious within the farm bill negotiations. And there's bigger things for our Congress to be concerned about than sugar at this point.
Got it. Yeah, I guess in our world of agriculture, it's always the world of agriculture, but you bring up a good point. There's bigger things to deal with, but good to know. At least we will likely have some consistency in it, at least knowing what we're dealing with as far as the sugar components of the farm bill are concerned.
But great.
Yeah, well, this is awesome, Kevin.
Well,
thanks for the
Well,
recap.
Great for thanks for joining us on our weekly podcast, everybody. Want to thank you for listening in, and please remember next week we'll be having a Hedging 101 seminar on Thursday, October 19th at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. If you have not seen an invitation for our seminar, please contact your McKinney-Fell representative or give us a call, and we'd be happy to send you a link to join that webinar. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Have a great weekend.
That concludes this podcast episode. For more information, visit McKinney-Fovell.com. Also visit us on LinkedIn for the latest industry news, updates, and intelligence.